now, stay tuned for Mrs. Green's World, a fun and informative green talk radio show that features guests from all over the country who talk about how living green can improve your lifestyle and be fun. Visit Mrs. Green's website, www.mrsgreensworld.com, for more information about her guests.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Saturday and welcome to Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. We are live at the Tucson Festival of Books, where I am being joined by about 80 to 100,000 of my closest friends. Lots of excitement. I have two wonderful guests that will be joining me today. One is Evelyn Resch, and she is the author of The Secret Lives of Teen Girls. And joining me later, Allison Hawthorne Deming, who is a contributor to the book Moral Ground, Ethical Action for a Planet in Peril. As always, an action-packed show, so get ready, stay here with me, and please visit my website for more information, mrsgreensworld.com. This show today is sponsored by Miraval Resort and Spa, and how cool is that? Can't wait to go back out to have my life in balance. Okay, I couldn't do the news today without giving a little bit of time to the tragedy around the world. And as I say on the show many times, we really are only one world, one planet. And let's pray. Let's get into action. Let's do whatever we can to support the I don't like to say the word victims, the survivors of the tsunami, and help rebuild those communities. And yesterday when I was watching the news, I was thinking of my friend Lisa Hopper, and I am not making this up. She started World Care. It is an internationally recognized organization, and started pretty much with used medical equipment and recycling medical equipment and being able to be one of the first responders, cut through all the red tape, and get to places that are impacted by national disasters, international disasters. I mean natural disasters. That's the word I'm looking for. Third time's a charm. And lo and behold, Lisa appears and Robin, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So I called them into my life, and then they just showed up. So Lisa is here today. She did a book signing for her book. She'll be here again today on the East Pavilion. If you want to donate and you are in Tucson, worldcare.org is the website. She has a huge warehouse, an unbelievable tribal group of volunteers that support their information, I mean their actions. So please visit worldcare.org if you want to. And if you're listening from outside of Tucson, you can go to worldcare.org too, because we're international. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Tehonatchul Park. Love giving them shout out. I love all the natural, wonderful, local places that we have here. And Tehonatchul is having their big plant sale, and I think that's awesome. And you can, of course, visit them by going to Tehonatchul.org. But one of the things that they're going to do this year, which I love, is they're going to have people on site that are experts on what to do given the frost that we had. And I have a lot of frost damage. Lots of homeowners do. I had a gathering at my house the other night, and people were bemoaning the fact that they lost cactus that they had in their yards for, 100 years or whatever. So they will have people there that are talking about what to do, what not to cut back yet because it might be too early. And they'll also be giving you advice on what to plant and what not to plant. Patent-pending hybrid that they have out there, what thrives in arid climates, searing heat and freezing temperatures as low as 13 degrees. So if you go to Tehonatchul Park, the sale for members is March 16th, and it's open to the public Saturday and Sunday, March 19th and 20th. And you can go to TehonatchulPark.org, or you can always go to Mrs. Green's website at Mrs. Green's World, and we'll direct you. Okay, speaking of the Festival of Books, I was going to say that I'm going to give away the first 100 people who visit my booth at the Festival of Books, which is near the College of Science Library, in case you're looking for me, a reusable bag, but that's too late. That's yesterday's news. We were swarmed and swamped, and we have no bags left, so we're doing a drawing for a bag and a gift certificate to Bookman's. So it's a wonderful place to be. I want to give another shout-out to Bookman's, who are such an integral part of this, and they support it in such a big way. I was getting texts from Amy, Sue, and Bob last night because they were at the author's table, at dinner, which is I went to last year and was wonderful. But one of the things that I love about any locally owned company, if they are in a sustainable mindset like Bookman's is, they're all about giving back and creating community, and they care very much. So visit them at Bookman's. They've got a lot going on. It's not just about used books. It's about an entire sustainable experience there. Okay, and another group that I haven't talked to you about that's a new sponsor that I love to do shout-outs for because they help Mrs. Green's World be possible is the Environmental Development Group or the Enjoy Dining Green Group. It's just EDG. That's all you have to remember. And one of the things they do that's wonderful is they collect, hey, there's my friend Karen. We got people waving from the streets. Oh, there is one of my closest friends. They collect cooking oil from restaurants, and it's a much more complicated thing than just collecting the cooking oil because restaurants have to dispose of it properly. There are actually regulations because if they throw it down the drain, they're in violation of some EPA standards. So EDG will collect the cooking oil from restaurants, and they turn it into biofuel. And I hope no one ever asks me how because that's not my job. But in the past year, EDG introduced their Tucson Vehicle Conversion Facility, and this is another awesome thing. They convert fleet diesel semi-tractors into renewable energy-efficient vehicles and, of course, reduce emissions, leaves no carbon footprint. I'm all about that. And they have an unbelievable, I think a good word would be, portfolio of solutions through their contracts from landscape maintenance and horticulture. They do storm water management, and I've had guests on the show that talk about that. You go to their website. They have these special grease interceptor and traps for that very kind of thing that they'll help you with. So they provide a lot of solution, and you can visit them at edgroup.us, so you'll love them. Now, I want to get a little bit of excitement in here. You're not going to believe this. The contest that we have going on at Mrs. Green's World, who's the greenest of them all, I will bet you that if you go to Mrs. Green's World right now, there'll be over 5,000 votes. And last year total, I think we had about 1,300. So you would be happy to go to Mrs. Green's World website, look at the contest. And what I love about it is look at the people that are being nominated and the difference they are making in the world. There are dead heats. There are four people that are really taking it on, and they're ahead by 40 votes, and then they're behind by 23 votes, and then they're up by 22 votes. So it's fun. It's meaningful. There's a lot of really neat things that you can read and find out about by going to MrsGreensWorld.com and seeing about the contest, and it'll just really make a difference. I can tell you that one of our own team members, Kelly King, her dad is on there, and since we can't do anything but vote once a day, we have people from all over the country. There's another woman from New Jersey who is she's been in first, second, and third place, so there's a national interest. She's from Bergen County, and I'm a Jersey girl, so I love that. And it's a lot of fun being a part of Mrs. Green's World. So we've got a lot going on. If you just tuned in, thank you. We are live at the Tucson Festival of Books at the University of Arizona campus. There are thousands of people. Up next, we are going to interview someone that I can tell you I like already just from when I met her, Evelyn Resch, and she wrote a book, The Secret Lives of Teen Girls. Correct, Evelyn?
Correct.
We'll be back. Stay here with me, Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790, KNST. Don't touch that dial.
News Talk 790, KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. We are live at the Tucson Festival Books. I am Mrs. Green from Mrs. Green's World. You can visit my website, MrsGreensWorld.com, to find out everything that I'm up to. Action-packed show today. Thank you to Miraval for sponsoring us on location with a crowd that you wouldn't believe. It's a gorgeous day, little wispy clouds in the air, and lots of fun and food and fabulous things. I love alliteration. Let's move right to our first guest at News Talk 790 KNST. Evelyn Resch is the Director of Women's Health and Sexuality Counseling at Miraval. She is also author of the book, The Secret Lives of Teen Girls, What Your Mother Wouldn't Talk About, But Your Daughter Needs to Know. And Evelyn, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm glad you're here. And I was telling people, because your book is out at our table, and you would not believe how many moms came up and said, so this is the book about, let's get it all out there on the table. And you and I spoke before the live show, and to me, life is sustainability. So there isn't anything that is excluded on my show. Everything is about living a life in balance in every aspect that there is. So when I read about what you're doing, it's an important aspect of our lives to me to talk about all aspects of them. So why are people, a lot of people, and doctors also so uncomfortable about talking about sex and sexuality when it is part of, you know, if there wasn't any of that, we wouldn't have any kids. You know what I'm saying? So there's a whole part of it, like, let's keep the world going on.
Well, true enough. And let me just address the issue about physicians, because what we have to remember with physicians is that they're trained and educated to manage with pathology. And thank goodness for that, because
right.
when we're
they
sick,
save lives. Right.
They save lives, and we really need them. But the vast majority of us who are sexually active and struggling with a certain aspect of that are not dealing with illness or disease. So, therefore, in the curriculum for most physicians, we're not seeing information about normal sexual health behaviors. And so they're, you know, they're at a disadvantage when their patients come to them and say, help me, I don't have any interest or I'm struggling. They really don't know what to tell them, and it's not any fault of their own. It's just it's a failing of their education.
And then there's the whole, which is story for another day, they have 15 minutes because it's managed care and
they've
got to get in and out and treat the presenting problem. So it is in no way meant, thank God for our physicians who saved my husband's life 3 weeks ago when he had a heart attack. So I'm up on physicians. Let's talk about a little bit about the book and what your background is and how you came to write such a book, because I think that's a huge part of the whole mission and vision and why you're doing what you're doing at Miraval.
Well, what happened for me was that I was in the middle of a collision. I was having adult women coming to me who were saying, I am struggling with my sexuality. I have no interest. In the meantime, I was in their age group also. And then I also was seeing teenage girls in my midwifery practice, and I'm an advanced practice nurse who specializes in obstetrics and gynecology. And I then was going home and I was living in a real living laboratory with my own daughter who was a teenage girl. So all of these things came together at once. And I said, someone has to put a voice to this experience. Someone does, because they were so interconnected, and we have this notion that there's a big cleft between what goes on for women in their adolescence as their sexuality is burgeoning and is coming forward, and then the choices that they make as adult women. There really is no cleft. It's a continuum. And that's a critical thing for us to understand, is that what happens to us as adolescent girls affects our sexuality as adult women and the choices that we make about who we couple with and how we do that.
And then how did you say, I mean, I want to know things like, because I so want to write a book. How did you do all that you're doing in terms of your practice and write a book?
Well, it was complicated. And there were times when, you know, everyone has to decide what their writing style is. And my writing style is to get to my desk by 7:45 and to leave my desk about 2:30 in the afternoon, because by that time, I really have no brain power.
You're toast.
Yeah, I am toast. And so when I was able to find days that I could sit at my desk for that long, that's what I did. And I did take a little bit of time off to focus on my writing as well.
And then did you have wonderful friends that edited? I mean, the whole process. I know this isn't a book about how you wrote, a show about how you wrote your book, but I think there are so many people that say they want to write a book, and mm-hmm. I have such respect and admiration for people who do,
yeah.
because we all have busy lives. So mm-hmm. I'm very intrigued by the whole topic because Mrs. Green wants to write a book.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have a lot of friends who edited. I had other people edit who were my editors. And the one thing I can tell you about writing a book is before you start or before you put anything on paper that you hope to have published, you must have a thick skin. Because when the criticism hits,
it's brutal.
It's brutal. Yeah.
Okay, it's not very sustainable.
Okay.
That's great. So can you describe for us the work that you do at Miraval and what kind of person would come to see you when they're out there?
Well, what I do essentially is I have a practice in sexual medicine. So I'm pulling from my experience as a medical clinician and midwife, and I'm pulling from my experience as a person who's trained to do sexuality counseling. The two come together in this really alchemic form, and I work with people who come in who have a myriad of concerns and problems. And it ranges from, I'm not interested in being intimate anymore, to I just am recovering from surgery and I'm trying to recapture a sense of my body being healthy and being integrated in an intimate relationship, to I have never felt sexually satisfied in my whole life. You name it. The cross-section of concerns and the interfacing of what's happening for people in their bodies and in their psyches is quite broad. And that's how people end up coming to see me. And certainly talking to me about their teen girls, that helps too.
And one of the things that I think about, having been to Miraval, by no means having a vast experience, I'm trying to improve on that, okay, is that it's a benign setting. You can go there, and it's not like you're making an appointment to go see somebody, which
That's
some
right.
people recoil at, but you are in a very private, magical place where you can come and be non-threatened and then say, okay, this is something I'd love to. Is that a fair representation of why your workshops are probably?
It is a fair representation, and not only is it a benign setting, but it's an anonymous setting. And that's deeply important to people when they're talking
Love
about
that.
Their sexuality.
Anonymous.
It's anonymous. You know, people say to me, I know I'll never see you again, and so it makes it easier to come in and discuss this with you. It also allows people the opportunity to take themselves out of the swirl of their day-to-day lives, which keeps them very distracted from self and from whether or not their behaviors are actually sustainable or not. And people get very habituated to doing the same thing all the time, even when it's not good for them. So when they take time out of their lives and they go into a location like Miraval and they say, I'm here to really focus on what's best for me, it makes it more possible to do that.
And I get that. I mean, I really get that. There's things that you just want to go and do there that are just, you're taking time. If you're there, you have to take care of yourself. It's like it's such a magical place, whether it's Miraval, whether you go and do a day spa somewhere,
yes,
whether
right.
you go to Sabino Canyon and sit on a rock.
Right.
I like the word habituated because we get into bad habituated habits.
We do, and we become frogs in the pot. You know, our blood temperature acclimates to the temperature of the water, and then, you know, it gets hotter and hotter, and we don't really notice it until we reach the boiling point.
And then we know what happens to those frogs.
Yes, that's
so
right.
Good.
And those really, frogs can't jump out in time.
We're really not so good. Tell me about, in terms of my show, I would love to think that everybody who listens to it thinks that it's about total health. Body, mind, spirit, that's to me the definition of sustainability, that you're looking at all those aspects of your life, because sustainability begins with an individual.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't begin with not using a plastic bag.
Right.
So how important is it to have healthy dialogue for parents with their children and really get it focused, and especially with all the things that go on with teenage girls? I've shared with you about some of the stories for my daughters,
mm-hmm.
and it's very real, and I think there are repercussions if they don't. Is that fair?
Yes, that's an absolutely fair representation. And, you know, one of the words that you used at the start of the show was building community. That was a phrase I heard, and I heard you mention community. And I think that one of the things that happens is that when something goes awry when it comes to sexual health issues, or when parents are feeling that they're not good at talking with their kids about sex, there's a tremendous sense of isolation, and they have this feeling that they're supposed to do this perfectly, whatever perfect means. When we don't do this with a consciousness around community, the sense of isolation makes it a very non-sustainable state. When we can reach out to other people who are parents or educators or people like myself who are nurse midwives and take care of teen girls and adult women, it really diffuses and disarms the terror that so many people experience around talking with their kids. How to do it, what information to give them, how do they manage when they stumble across something that feels really terrifying hard to understand. And that's something that I try very hard, both in the book and also in my own life, to really emphasize to people, to say this is not something that you have to do alone. And don't think for a minute you're the only one who's up against it.
That's the other part of it. And I want to just, I mean, in the minutes that we have left, there are so many issues facing teenage girls today, and I am aware of that, and I read about them, and I have a niece who's going to be 13 who's very healthy and whole, and a granddaughter who's 10. Bulimia, all of those things, cutting on themselves. I want it to be a positive show, but there are secrets that teenage girls have.
Yes.
What kind of things do you reveal in the book when you say the secret lies of teen girls?
Well, the most interesting thing, I think, is that the secrets that girls have are secrets that we force them to keep because we're not willing to talk with them openly about how they feel. What we tend to do in our panic and terror is we tend to eclipse their voices, mute their voices, not let them speak, and just talk from our own sense of anxiety and worry. So what ends up happening is that girls retreat and they recede and they don't tell us what is really happening because we don't stop talking long enough to listen to them. And I do talk about things that are really difficult, like bulimia, like negative body image, like depression. And I think that one of the things we have to remember is that when you look at the research, the good research on teenagers, what they will say over and over again is, I want to be able to come to my parents. And in order to do that, parents need to learn how to stop talking long enough to listen to what their kids really have to say.
And what do you think? What's your report card on how things are going? Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Is it about the same in terms of the openness? There's a lot. What's your sense of, I always love a world full of hope, possibility, and change. Is it just same old, or are more people willing to open up? What kind of impact do you think the message that your book has in terms of creating a sustainable family?
Well, I think that it's actually getting better than we think. And I feel like we have to be discerning when we read things in the media or we hear things, to not follow that or swallow it hook, line, and sinker, and to really investigate it. But I think teens are in better shape than we think.
Okay. Love to end on that note. Evelyn Resch, author of the book, The Secret Lies of Teen Girls, What Your Mother Wouldn't Talk About. You can find her through MrsGreensWorld.com. Stay here with me. We've got another great author coming up, and you're not going to want to miss it.
News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. News Talk 790 KNST, Mrs. Green's World. Welcome to my world. We are live at the Tucson Festival of Books with, going to say maybe 40 to 50,000 of my closest friends walking by, authors from all over the world. If you are in Tucson, why aren't you here? I cannot imagine. It's like, this is one of the things we can be so proud of. If you're listening from around the country, please plan on coming next year. You couldn't buy this weather. It is so absolutely and positively, perfectly, gorgeously, if that's a word, awesome. And I would love you to visit my website, MrsGreensWorld.com. If you just tuned in, there's a contest going on right there, and we have over 5,000 votes. And the reason I'm asking you to go visit that website and to go read about the people is because it will fill you with hope, possibility, and change to see what people are doing around the world. Wonderful guest that just was on, Evelyn Resch, author of The Secret Lies of Teen Girls. Another wonderful guest sitting right next to me, Allison Hawthorne Deming, and my husband is from Deming, but I'm sure we can't even like go that connection, right? She's shaking her head. Allison, thank you. And Allison is a contributor to the book Moral Ground, Ethical Action for a Planet in Peril. So once again, an action-packed show with Mrs. Green. So tell us a little bit. The cover of the book in and of itself is riveting. And I have to say, it can't be easy to come up with a cover of a book. If I saw that book, I would stop and say, what's that about? It's a hand with a print of the world, a map of the world, of the globe, right?
Isn't it beautiful?
It's beautiful.
It makes such a great statement about what this book is trying to communicate to us, that the future of the Earth is in our hands, as we know.
Love that.
It says it so beautifully with an image. Well, that was the book designer who came up with that, and we love that. But this book was edited by two environmental philosophers, Kathleen Dean Moore and Michael Nelson. And they felt that there was a part of the environmental conversation that was missing often. And that was, you know, we get more and more data and more effects, and the science is really good and it's really helpful. And then we say, well, how come everything isn't changing? How come we haven't changed our lives? How come we haven't got the policies that will protect the Earth in the future? And those, so these folks really wanted to answer that question from the perspective of being philosophers and ethicists and saying, well, it's because we're not clear and we don't say enough about what really matters to us at the deepest level. We care about the Earth. We care about the future. We care about the beauty of landscapes. We care about animals. We care about being moral creatures and doing the right thing. And we need to really say that more often in relationship to the concern for sustainability. So that's what the book's about.
And it's unique in its design, and not to mention the big overall view from 30,000 feet of taking a look at it that way, which I've never had a guest on that put it in that perspective. So when you say they were the editors, what is the composite of the book?
Well, it's a really cool project. They invited about 100 people to contribute something to the book, and they asked religious leaders. So they have John Paul II in here.
You are kidding me. They have Desmond Tutu did
the
foreword. I'm like, whoa.
They have the Dalai Lama. And then they have authors like Barbara Kingsolver and Ursula Le Guin and Wendell Berry, who've been really important in articulating our relationship about the natural world. Poets, Gary Snyder, Terry Tempest Williams, some really prominent scientists, E.O. Wilson, and others. So they wanted to ask people who already had some presence as authors or thinkers or religious leaders in this area to contribute something to one great, big, loving statement about doing more from the base of what we love and care about.
So is Alison Hawthorne Deming a contributor?
Alison Hawthorne Deming is a contributor.
And what did you write about? What was your contribution?
My contribution is an essay called The Feasting. And it came about, I was on a beach on Cape Cod on a weird day in May when the bluefish were running. And the bluefish are very aggressive, and they were so aggressive that day, and they were feeding very close to shore, and they were having a ball. You know, it was a big party for the bluefish. But all along the beach, there was this huge pile of tiny little baby alewives who had fled in panic, you know, to get out of the way of these feasting bluefish. And I looked at that, and it made me think that it's really important always to look at two sides of relationships. And sometimes we act like the bluefish. We're feasting, and we don't even notice the lives that suffer because of our bounty. And so I wrote about it. I wrote about that as an event that I witnessed. And what I wanted to say to people was, listen, I know it's depressing when we talk about the fate of the Earth. Sometimes it's really hard to think about, and the science is frightening. But that's okay. We should feel depressed. We should feel some grief, because when we feel grief, it means that our hearts have opened to those that are suffering, that we're considering that it's time to change our behavior and think about what we value and whether what we're doing is reflecting the sense of our own right way of being in the world. So I basically said that grief about loss in the natural world is really a sort of memo to our own moral imagination to say, well, what more could you do with choices in your own life? Whether you have a lot of influence, you know, as a political official, or whether you have a small influence over what happens in your own home and what kind of car you drive and what kind of light bulbs you use, you know, what can each person do because they feel that grief about loss in the world?
And, you know, I don't know if what I experienced on my journey to creating Mrs. Green was grief, but it was something like that of it's overwhelming, it makes me depressed, I don't know what to do, am I doing something wrong, what should I be doing right, it's too much information, you know, the whirling dervish brain of what it's like, and making that, like, being sad and saying, what can I do? And so what I do is this, to bring to light things like this kind of book and a philosophical overview. So what inspired these two people to get? I mean, what a lot of work, and how long did it take, and how did they pick the people? Do you know these things?
Well, I know them both quite well. They did it out of a great sense of conviction and passion. You know, they just felt like, how come nothing is changing?
You know, yes, I understand.
You know that feeling.
But now it
well.
Is. Yes,
but
yes.
Now it is. Now it is. We're seeing lots of change and lots more awareness now, particularly at grassroots and community levels. So they just out of sheer commitment said they were going to do it, and they researched, you know, who would be the thinkers who would give a really broad view and really strong voices and might invite readers to look at a book who don't pick up an environmental book but might pick up a book that had Barack Obama and Ursula Le Guin and
John Paul II. I mean, that's
Pope John Paul
and the Dalai Lama
and N. Scott Momaday.
Now, who's N. Scott Momaday? Tell me who that is. I don't
N.
know who everybody
Scott
is.
Momaday.
You know who it is, Ryan? No,
he's a wonderful one of our most important Native American writers. He is Kiowa. He used to teach here at the university. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning
author.
I'm
sorry, I didn't know, but I admit it.
He's
Mrs. Green is authentic.
Wonderful, both fiction writer and nonfiction writer and poet, very important in the whole renaissance of contemporary American Indian writing. So a very important presence. He's been on, you know, public television as a spokesperson, a very articulate one. So many folks would be familiar with him. So this book doesn't only invite people who've been writing about environmental issues for many years, like myself and Wendell Berry and Kathleen Dean Moore and Scott Sanders, but also a really broad swath of other leaders who think about ethical questions and, you know, how our religious values might guide our thinking in this area and how our political action might. So it was, I think, part of their idea was, let's get a really broad swath. They call them 80 visionaries.
Which I love. I mean, that's and I love that it just doesn't seem that there's any religious, political. It is universal in the people that they approach, and on and on. Yeah. Do you know what the Dalai Lama had to say in the book? And I don't want to put you on the spot because there's a lot of content in that book, and I don't have a vast knowledge of it. But it's like, or give me an example of someone that you know what their essay was about or what their contribution
was.
Well,
what's interesting is the way the book is shaped. The question is, do we have a moral obligation to take action to protect the future of a planet in peril?
So and all of the contributors answered that question.
Everyone
in their own
answers
way.
It.
Okay.
And some of them answer it in terms of the survival of humankind. And some of them answer it, such as John Paul II, yes, for the sake of the children. And some answer it, yes, for the sake of the Earth itself and all the life forms on the Earth. And some answer it by saying, yes, because for the stewardship of God's creation. And others answer, yes, because we are moral creatures and we need to be, you know, to act in a moral way in the world to fulfill what is possible for us.
And you know, I think you're right, and I think it ties in with what Evelyn said. At a deep level, there is a consciousness that we, I think she used the word, it's one of my favorite words, habituate away.
Yes.
We get into these other habits, and yeah. It's not a state of living consciously. It's a state of doing, not being.
Right.
And
too
we
busy.
Have a hurry up. I got a Facebook. I got a post. I got a tweet.
Right.
I got a, you know, I've got to be in a hurry.
That's right.
So we
That's
don't
right.
have time to do that. And this is about stopping that. It's a great book to take to a cabin and sit
yep.
and read and then ponder, like be in the space that you are on in Cape Cod,
yeah.
which is not a bad place to have these wonderful ideas come
it's
to you at all.
It's not a bad place. But to open a little space in your life for reflection about these questions and for thinking about, you know, well, what is it that matters to me? I mean, if short-term profit matters more than anything else to you, then you make a different decision about what to do when there's an oil spill in the Gulf. But if, you know,
right.
a way of life for all those creatures and for the people who work in that beautiful part of the country, if that matters to you, if that's a value you hold dear, then you deal differently with that crisis.
And one of the things that we'll talk about a little bit when we come back, it really does tie into what's going on in Japan right now with the tsunami. There's a consciousness, there is a connectivity that everybody in the world is riveted and they're watching. News Talk 790, KNST, Mrs. Green's World, unbelievable, interesting guest, Allison Hawthorne Deming, who is a contributor to the book Moral Ground, Ethical Action for a Planet in Peril. We will be right back. Please stay here with me. Tucson Festival of Books, live at the University of Arizona campus. 790
KNST.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. I don't know if you heard that noise in the background, but we are live from the Tucson Festival of Books. That was the Tucson Fire Department probably just showing us the love. What do you think?
Yeah.
We are live from the Tucson Festival of Books. If you are not here and you are in Tucson, why not? It's the place to be. There are thousands of people, lots of families, lots of grandmas and grandpas and little kids, and I encourage you to come out. Our interview for the next segment is with Allison Hawthorne Deming, who is a contributor to the book Moral Ground, Ethical Action for a Planet in Peril. It may sound depressing, it may sound complicated, and it's not. It's a beautiful work. It's a beautiful, beautiful book about our planet and getting into some moral, ethical action because you can be part of the solution. How fair is that, Allison? That's a good way to put it.
That's
in
right.
Every type of I don't know, way to put it, from poetry to essays to thoughts from people that are deep thinkers, which I will make the claim we can all be deep thinkers. It's a choice. Okay, we have a caller, and it's Hank. And if I forgot to mention 60 times, we can accept callers today. I get so excited about being on location, 520-880-5678. So, Hank, thanks for calling in.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, Alice, first of all, Allison, I want to thank you for the book. I've had the opportunity to read it, and it is a wonderful piece because there's so much written about scientific evidence of environmental degradation and global climate change that a lot of people are frightened of that. But to see the human aspect, both on the religious level and a little bit on the political level, is a wonderful new vision on what is happening with our planet.
Hank, what a great comment, and I really appreciate it. And I don't know if this is Hank. Is this my Hank?
It's the apple butter, Hank.
Okay, Hank. I always say your last name. It's Krizik, right?
Krizik.
Okay. And he is a friend of mine. Love that you're listening. Love that you're so really involved in the contest. And I've been talking about the contest because of the wonderful things that people are writing about, people like you that go on your bike with your daughter to school, and your wife wrote a beautiful, beautiful story about why she thinks you should be the greenest of them all. And I don't care if I'm embarrassing you. You deserve it. You do so much in faith-based communities and for the planet. So shout out to you. And Do you have a question? I'm stealing the show here. You'd think I was Mrs. Green. What am I doing?
Primarily, I wanted to ask, how did you actually get the idea to put religion into a book about environmental and climate changes? It has been a hot topic, and there's some discussion that really the religious aspect should be kept out of it. I'm encouraged in reading the book that these aspects were put into it.
Yeah, well,
it's a
great question, and I think that's changing. There are so many churches now that have programs like the Green Team or the Creation Care Team or thinking about what is our obligation toward the stewardship of Earth from a religious perspective. And of course, our religions teach us compassion, and that compassion extends beyond the human family, and that's one of the points of the book, that our religious leaders are helping us to extend our imaginations beyond the human family. We still have a lot of work to do within the human family in terms of our peace and justice and compassion. But I'm so glad that aspect of the book resonated with you, because I think, of course, one hope with a work like this is that more religious leaders and communities and lay people will see that there is a profound role for religion. There's been actually a lot of work that's been done looking at all the world's religions and what are the ecological teachings that are buried there. There was a huge project that was sponsored by Harvard University some years back, and It was really, really fascinating. They brought a team of researchers together over a period of years, and they examined what the religions had to say, and it's all there. So any religious leader who seeks within his or her religious texts and tradition will find messages that suggest that we are responsible to care for our brothers and sisters in the human world, in the animal world, and for the planet that has given us our lives.
And that is just such a wonderful way to put, I've mentioned this man, I'm sure Hank has heard me talk about him because Hank tunes into Mrs. Green, but I have interviewed a man named Mayor Bob Dixon, and he's from Kansas, and it's the town that got destroyed in the what do you call it, tornado. Mm-hmm. It got, and they built it back as a totally sustainable community. And I've asked him more about if it's in the political arena, if sustainability is a political question. And he said, absolutely not. We have forgotten how to be civil to one another. That's what happened in politics. Mm-hmm. But being good stewards of the earth, mm-hmm. it says in the good book, as he refers to it, whatever book that might be for you, right. that being good stewards of the earth is every man's responsibility, man and woman's responsibility. So it's
right.
it's I love that answer.
I do too. You know, we see how painful and hard it is for our governmental systems, both in our nation and then worldwide, to come together and make agreements around this issue, because you know, it's said that sacrifices must be made, and we're making sacrifices all the time. But I think that we can feel that we're doing something if we look at what we can do in our own communities, in our own homes, in our own profession. Start a radio show.
That's right.
As Mrs. Green has done.
That's right. That's right.
You know, in whatever area where you can have some influence, if you make small steps, you're helping.
Yes, and one of my favorite authors is Seth Godin, and as he says, poke the box. Just poke the box. Poke your own box and see what you can do. And when you talk about someone like Hank, he is off in faith-based communities putting solar panels on churches and schools and getting those communities engaged. It can move the world forward very, very, very rapidly. So I love that, and I did not know that was part of the book. So I want to ask you just like a practical question. Is this book available at Amazon.com?
Yes, it is.
How do people get the book, and are they signing today? Is it one of the featured books here at the Festival of Books?
Because there is a panel on Sunday at 1 o'clock on this book, there should be a signing after that, and books should be available.
And who's going to sign it?
Well,
are you going to be one of the
signers?
I'll
sign it as a contributor.
Right.
I'll just sign it on my contribution.
On your
but
contribution
I'm only
page.
A lowly one of 80. So I will be signing by proxy for a very honorable team of colleagues who humble me.
So we're not going to have a book signing by the Dalai Lama.
I'm
so sad now.
It's okay. I'm so sorry.
It's really okay, but that's wonderful. And I have a panel tomorrow, and it's at the same time, unfortunately, or I'd come, but Jerry Udelson is doing a panel. He's not doing a panel. He's doing a presentation. I think he is the panel on water, which is one of my obsessions. He's an internationally recognized expert on the water crisis in the world, and he really articulates what our challenge is in that arena very well. But there's enough going on for everybody here at the mm-hmm. Tucson Festival of Books. What when you contributed and then read the book, what's your biggest takeaway personally as someone who writes, as someone who thinks, as someone who has moments on Cape Cod? Mm. What was your biggest takeaway? And I'd love to frame it in terms of, you know, either hope, possibility, or change.
Oh,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? Because that's where we want to always leave
absolutely.
Things in Mrs. Green's world.
It's easy to feel compassion fatigue and issue fatigue, especially today when we're just getting the word about the terrible tragedy in Japan that's going on. And you know, we're all so burdened by the pain in the world. But I think when you read the work of writers and thinkers of this sort, you realize the great energy of creative thought and of caring and of intelligence that can be brought to bear on problems like this. And you realize, you know, human beings are astonishing creatures, and we're capable of great change and accomplishment and technical, you know, prowess. And so we're doing a lot of work in our society on the technological issues around climate change. We also have to look at this ethical side, because it has to all work together so that we keep asking, you know, are we doing as much as we can based on those things that we value most dearly to leave a world for others that's as good as the world we have?
And one of the things I love about having you on the show and about the message of the book is that it's a, to me, I would have loved the cover, but probably passed over it because I would have thought, oh, yeah, here's a lot of ethical action for a planet in peril. Your representation of the book, I will order the book. I will read the book because that's the kind of thing. It's not a book that you probably sit down and read it. You read one or two contributors.
Right.
You think about
that's
it. You come back to it. You keep it out there. It's an inspirational reading book.
You keep it on your table. Today it's the Dalai Lama. Next week it's Barack Obama. And
the
then it's Ursula Le Guin.
Is Alison Hawthorne Deming. Come on. Let's give a shout out for you. And if we have, how much time do we have left, Ryan? How are we doing?
About a minute.
Okay. What about books you've written? You're an author.
I'm an author. I've written 4 books of poetry and 3 books
of
nonfiction. And I just finished a new book about animals called Zoologies that's all full of weird animal stories for the 21st century. So I've been obsessed with these kinds of
things. Love it, love it. We're going to have to end this wonderful show with wonderful guests. MrsGreensWorld.com. Enter our contest. Come to the Festival of Books. Google Alison Hawthorne Deming with 1 M. I did it. You'll find a lot. Have a great weekend. Be safe. And we'll tune in again next week because we love Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for calling in, Hank. Have a great, safe weekend.
You've been listening to Mrs. Green's World on News Talk 790 KNST, all about learning that going green can be fun. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and tune in next Saturday at noon for Mrs. Green's World on News Talk 790 KNST.